ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
People residing outside of the metropolitan cities, their risk of drowning is 2.7 times higher. I think it's really a unique characteristic of the Australian way of life. But in practice, translating that into regional areas can be challenging. If we don't have great safe places to swim, and if kids through their early years don't get the opportunity to build those foundation skills.
Parents in WA Southwest say they are struggling to get their children into swimming lessons, blaming long wait lists of up to nearly a year and a lack of pool infrastructure. It comes as new data reveals a 30% increase in drowning deaths in WA over the last 10 years. We'll have that story soon. And the COVID pandemic and the rise of streaming media have made things very challenging for cinemas, with many having to close their doors. We head to one regional cinema in South Australia that still holds a special place in the community and is keeping the doors open.
You come into one of the popular movies, the whole cinema gets filled, you know, little tiny town, nothing going on. We fill every seat, there's people lining up outside the door, and it's just so great to enjoy that movie experience with the whole crowd. You know, it's like watching a game of footy.
It's just like a fun night out.
It is, and you can get chop-tops, which is my favourite part, of course.
I'm Alex Hyman, and this is Australia Wide. In the far west of New South Wales, the Darling Barker River is life to the remote Indigenous communities of Wilcannia and Menindee. However, locals are too scared to swim in the river, and a recent report confirms what many people know to be true. The river is in poor condition. Recently, scientists came to the far west to report back to the community about the findings. Catherine Spackman has this story.
Barkindji Ranger Fred Bennett says the Darling Barker River is important to cultural knowledge for the Menindee community, but they can't share their cultural knowledge anymore because the river is sick.
Even our little kids, you know, they can't even take our kids out and teach them stuff like we've been taught, you know, back when we was kids as well, and it's pretty depressing when you can't do that, yeah.
And why can't you bring them out? Just because the water's not good enough? Are you concerned about the health?
Yeah, just the health of the water situation and all the chemicals. And like back in the day, we used to swim in this river. Today, you know, we're too scared to even let the kids go and swim in this river these days.
It's a sentiment that sums up the findings of a recent New South Wales government-funded project looking at the health of the Darling Barker between Wilcannia in the far west of the state and Wentworth near the Victorian border. Angus Ferguson, a senior environmental scientist at the Department of Climate Change, Energy, the Environment and Water, says anecdotal feedback confirms scientific research.
We heard stories from the mob at Wilcannia the other day where they were asking questions around, you know, rashes for people who'd been swimming during the summer, you know, and that was directly related to the, you know, to these harmful algal blooms.
The Darling Barker River Health Project was commissioned in response to the large floods in 2023. It looked at the health of the river over six major indicators: geomorphology, hydrological stress, riparian vegetation, biological condition, water quality, and landscape disturbance. Project manager Dr. Catherine Corbell says the report found the river is in poor health.
So the area around Menindee has probably got the poorest health in the study area. We're looking at really degraded water quality in that region, and that's reflected in the biota that we're finding. So we're finding pollution-tolerant species. We're not finding those species that need that pristine water to survive. We're also finding a lot of carp in that area as well.
The report concluded the river's poor health was because of widespread changes to flows associated with river regulation. Macquarie University lecturer Dr. Corbell says the river is being impacted by what's happening in the northern part of the Murray-Darling Basin.
Yeah, look, what we've found is hydrological stress in the catchment is fundamentally impacted by those waters that it is receiving. So yes, we're noticing that from this study, massive inputs of water are coming down, and we see that turbidity in the water increasing quite dramatically when those flood waters come down, and along with that comes a drop in conductivity. So we know it's that fresh water input that's happened because upstream that's coming into Wilcannia that's then impacting the water quality.
Menindee suffered devastating fish kills in 2019 and again in 2023. Dr. Corbell could not rule out another fish kill happening.
Look, that's very hard to answer. I don't think it's out of the realm. I don't think anyone who works in water in this region would think it's out of the realm of possibility for another fish kill to happen. Hopefully we'll be able to have water to be able to manage that. So as I said, we've been managing it. Last summer we had water in the reserve so that it was able to be released and mitigate those impacts.
While most of the project has concluded with the report, six water buoys installed into the river will remain as part of ongoing monitoring. Every 30 minutes, the water is taken from the river at four depths and uploaded to the Natural Hazards Science Hub. Dr. Corbell says the information can be used by the community and water managers to help prevent things like stratification.
What they do is they look at the data from their smart buoys and they decide whether they're going to do small pulse releases to be able to mix that water so that they increase the oxygen and prevent that harm to aquatic biota. So that's been a really positive part of this project, is we've been able to use those smart buoys to actually manage water releases to potentially, prevent or help prevent things like fish kills.
Meanwhile, locally based water justice researcher and river advocate Dan Schultz from the Australian National University says it's important the report's findings translate into action. They say the report's findings should make its way into the Murray-Darling Basin Review next year.
I really think that the federal authority and the New South Wales government could do a lot to work together in creating a real solution. But my great fear here is that the Barker-Darling River will be overlooked and that the work going on now, without being resourced and without being sort of supported by the federal government, might not actually translate into sort of meaningful action. And that's a great concern.
That's Dan Schultz ending that report by Catherine Spackman in Broken Hill.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
The mother of an 8-year-old boy killed in an e-bike crash is demanding changes to the law to prevent further deaths. A 15-year-old boy has been charged with multiple offences over Zeke Hondo's death, including dangerous driving causing death, with the matter returning to court in March. In the meantime, Zeke's family wants to see changes to rules around e-mobility. Owen Jacques has more.
Zeke Hondo lived his life on wheels, from red plastic push trikes to balance bikes as a toddler, then riding bigger and faster things as he got older. So when his big sister Tiana rang to say he'd crashed on the way home from his school but was okay, their mother Chloe Whedon expected some grazes and scratches.
I was on my way home from work and I received a phone call from my daughter and she advised me that Zeke had been in an accident. At that point, it didn't sound too bad because he had his helmet on still and he had no outside external injuries that my daughter could see and he did speak straight afterwards.
Moments later, her world was ripped away.
She called back and just said that, it was a bit worse than first expected. He had no blood coming out of his mouth, so that's when I said to phone the ambulance and, I headed straight there.
Zeke was riding his e-bike when he was allegedly struck by a high-powered e-motorcycle on a bike path near the Sunshine Motorway on Queensland's Sunshine Coast.
You don't ever think it's going to be that bad. He's had plenty of little falls off his bike over the years and, your head just doesn't go to that point. You don't expect to walk in and see that ever.
He was taken to hospital but died from his injuries. Zeke's bedroom remains largely untouched, his mother not yet ready to visit the world he left behind.
I'm still in disbelief. That's just, we're numb. It's not something you expect.
Chloe Whedon is among a growing chorus of parents, doctors and politicians calling for stricter rules on motorised bikes.
Zeke loved riding and, I don't want to be an anti-e-bike person. Zeke wouldn't want that. He wouldn't want them banned altogether. Once again, it just comes down to stricter rules, education and just to keep everybody safe.
And she's not alone. Bicycles Queensland, the Australian Medical Association Queensland, RACQ, Queensland Law Society, and multiple councils are just some of those publicly calling for change.
Yeah, look, I think parents can definitely take the lead, but I think still more messages need to be put out there. You know, the proofs and the pudding, the stats are all there, and unfortunately they are increasing.
Dr. Andrew Hobbins-King is the Medical Trauma Director at the Sunshine Coast University Hospital.
We're seeing more and more e-personal mobility device injuries every day. Rule of thumb, you used to see maybe one every 3 days. Now we're seeing one pretty much every day. And these are ranging from, you know, minor injuries, trauma, you know, broken arms, head injuries, to catastrophic and life-changing multi-system trauma, which is often at high speed with catastrophic results.
Zeke's death occurred about 10 kilometres from the office of Budrum MP Brent Mickleberg, the state transport minister. A parliamentary inquiry into e-mobility devices is due to report at the end of March. Mr. Mickleberg says laws will not be changed until after the inquiry's report is released, but Chloe Whedon says that wait is too long.
Yeah, it needs to come in sooner rather than later. How many more kids have to die or get, you know, lifelong injuries due to this happening to them? So more needs to be done, and the sooner the better.
Owen Jarks with that report.
ABC Australia Wide.
It's Alex Hyman here with you on Australia Wide. Great to have your company. Coming up, what will the social media ban mean for rural boarding school students? Some young people in the regions are being encouraged to learn old school ways to stay in contact as the social media ban for those under 16 comes into effect over the summer holidays.
Now, when I grew up, it was the phone in the middle of the house that Mum and Dad could listen to no matter who I was talking to. Or we made plans when we were at school and we then followed them through, you know, later on in the day. That's definitely not the life of a teenager today. And we're going to have to actually teach them some of the skills to make sure that they can be in contact with their friends during the holidays.
That story soon here on Australia Wide. Parents in Western Australia's southwest are facing months on wait lists for swimming lessons, raising concerns for the water safety of their kids. Recent WA statistics on drowning show an alarming increase as swimming skills and infrastructure lag behind what's needed. Experts say the situation is worse in regional areas where pool infrastructure isn't meeting demand from local families. Bunbury reporter Anna Cox has this story.
Private swimming lessons like this one in the regional WA city of Busselton are increasingly shouldering the responsibility of teaching kids how to swim.
August, I'm taking your needle. You don't need that.
In the southwest region, the population is growing fast, but there's not enough swimming lessons to match.
It's infuriating and it's scary. Us as parents, we can teach them to a degree. But I don't have the skill set or the training to teach my two-year-old what he should do when he falls into a pool.
That's Kate Cutler, a mother of two living near Bunbury, 180 kilometres south of Perth in WA. She says she's been stuck on a waitlist for public swimming lessons for 11 months.
I have to go to the other side of town at Australind from Dale Up. I have to leave school 10 minutes early. You just have to take what you can get. They're about double compared to the public.
Recent data from Royal Life Saving Australia revealed a 30% increase in drowning deaths in WA when looking at the state's 10-year average. Peter Leversuch is the Executive Officer of Royal Life Saving WA.
People residing outside of the metropolitan cities, their risk of drowning is 2.7 times higher. I think it's really a unique characteristic of the Australian way of life. But in practice, translating that into regional areas can be challenging. If we don't have great, safe places to swim, and if kids through their early years don't get the opportunity to build those foundation skills, what we're seeing is they're entering into their teenage years with really just some very basic skills that are really inadequate to embrace the challenges, whether it's rock fishing, boating, sailing, and this is where we're seeing the tragedies occur. So if we don't invest in building those foundation skills early and providing the facilities and the workforce, we're now seeing the results of those gaps.
In response to waitlists for public pools, parents are turning to private swimming schools, one of which is owned by Liz Fowler in Busselton, 220 kilometres south of Perth. She says there is not enough supply to meet demand.
More facilities, it has to be an initial step. They're restricted for space. The physical space, it's just not enough. It's a shame that it is such an expense, but it is an expense that is of the benefit of the community. These statistics are never going to get better.
Further north in Australind, 160 kilometres south of Perth, Heidi Brayett is also running her own private swimming school in her backyard pool.
Bunbury is growing each year, and I feel like there's just not enough swim schools for the demand and people moving here. And yes, obviously it means more kids, so ultimately we need more swimming schools. I have lots of kids coming from Busselton and Harvey.
Building more public swimming infrastructure is a significant investment, but Peter Leversuch says it's worth the expense.
We start to long-term plan out where we have safe places to swim, whether that's a pool, a local waterhole, a local bit of coastline. They are things that we have to find a way to make sure that we engage kids at the right time of their life. And it is concerning to us that in some parts we have a real demand that isn't being met.
That's Royal Life Saving WA CEO Peter Leversuch ending that report from Anna Cox. The timing of the national social media ban for children under age 16 has left boarding schools scrambling for ways to help their students navigate being cut off from their friends over the school holidays. The ban will become law as 76% of Australia's 21,000 boarders head back to their regional and remote homes. Just under 12,500 boarders in year 10 and below are expected to be cut off from social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram. Australian Boarding Schools Association Chief Executive Officer Richard Stokes told our reporter Jodie Hamilton there were concerns some rural students could be feeling even more isolated.
That's a real risk. We should be alert to that fact and keep our eyes open. Now, the thing that I'm really worried about, I think the timing hasn't been thought of well. Because the 10th of December is when kids are going home from school. You know, they're on holidays, they're away from, you know, all of those support networks. So all of those boarders don't have that wonderful support and circle of care around them that they would have normally during term time. So they're going to be, you know, not only away from that, but then also away from all of their friends. So they can't even talk to them. You know, they'll have to find ways to do it. So we're a bit worried about that whole mental health issue in that space.
Is there anything being looked at to help transition students away from social media?
We need to do a little bit of work teaching our students how to be in contact with their friends once they're not able to do it on the social media platforms, because they use Snapchat and Instagram chat all the time. That's how they talk to their friends. And so they're going to be, of course, at home on holidays and then potentially have, you know, their way of connecting with their friends cut off completely.
Do you think that boarding students perhaps are in a unique position where maybe they do have some distance away from their friends?
Absolutely they do. One of the things that our boarding schools have been very good at doing is restricting technology use after hours. You know, particularly at night time when the kids are, you know, when they're supposed to be going to bed and whatever, they have to hand in their technology and they don't get it back until the next day. They often have quite restricted hours depending on their age as well. They've been doing that. But one of the problems that we've got is that those boarders are spread out not only all across Australia, but even all across the world. Their way of keeping in touch with their friends, they, you know, like you and I might text each other or send an email, but that's definitely not a process that young people use to keep in touch with each other. And so it's going to be a really interesting space for those kids. And the responsibility I think our boarding staff have is to help them come to terms with that before it hits, before they go home for their holidays. 76% of our boarders are rural and remote. They're kids that actually grow up in the country and don't have a choice but to go to boarding school. They go home to their property, which could be a long way away from anybody else. It can be a very lonely space, and we don't really want that to be the case, because that loneliness can cause all sorts of issues.
Have boarding staff members seen some negative impacts of social media?
Oh, heck yes. It's one of those big challenges. And I guess one of the good things about boarding school is that by removing their devices at night, you're in a situation where you're actually sort of giving them some space to be able to do that. What we find is, you know, it's really quite fascinating. By removing the devices from the kids, then they become quite social again.
So boarding schools might in fact be a step ahead of, say, parents at home who are struggling to get the media off their children.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah, very much so. One of the things that we're going to have to come to terms with is actually working on ways for kids to be in touch with their friends. You know, when I grew up, it was the phone in the middle of the house that Mum and Dad could listen to, no matter who I was talking to. Or we made plans when we were at school and we then followed them through, you know, later on in the day. That's definitely not the life of a teenager today. And we're going to have to actually teach them some of the skills to make sure that they can be in contact with their friends during the holidays. Otherwise, they're going to be quite lonely.
Australian Boarding Schools Association CEO Richard Stokes. Port Lincoln boarder Annabelle Bowie is from Lock-on-Air Peninsula and she'll only be affected by the ban for a few months until she turns 16. Her friendship group is looking for alternatives on how to stay in touch over the holiday break.
We all use it after school, and because we have study in the boarding house, we're not allowed our phones for about an hour and a half, and then we also have dinner where we're not allowed our phones at all. Some of the younger people get their phones taken away, so last year I got my phone taken away from 9:30.
Was that a good thing?
Yeah, I think it was a good thing because it gave me time to sleep, because sometimes when you're laying in bed, you just, you know, you see your phone there and you're like, oh, I better check one more time. So it made my sleep schedule a lot more healthier.
Some people are saying perhaps just pick up the phone or use text message.
We're all going to swap numbers and stuff and still talk, but I know a lot of people who don't like using Messenger.
How often do you get in touch with your friends?
I talk to them a lot. We'd have catch-ups and stuff. Like, sometimes we're in group chats where we talk about what happened that day or something like that. But it's not very often, maybe once a week. I'll talk to some of my friends from the boarding house if I don't see them.
So is it the ability of that social media to have group chats and things like that that's the difference perhaps between, you know, old-school media where you just send a text message?
Yeah, it's definitely different. Like, having group chats feels more inclusive with everyone, and I can talk to everyone at once and I don't have to message everyone individually if I'm asking a question to everyone.
So what do you think about the ban?
I think it'll be good. I think it'll be a good experience to see how I cope without having social media. I think I'll be fine, but there's a lot of people that I don't am not too confident with, because I live in such a small town. I might go to my grandma and grandpa's farm a lot more and do a lot more jobs around the house, hopefully, stuff like that.
That's 15-year-old boarder Annabelle Lowy, who will be going home from school to South Australia's Eyre Peninsula next month. And she was ending that story from Jodie Hamilton. There's sea changes and tree changes, and now there's Terun University to dusty outback streets changes. The people of southwest Queensland are celebrating as their very first permanent psychiatrist has been appointed. Dan McRae reports that it is timely as mental health advocates call for regional Aussies, especially men, to take their mental health seriously.
Dr. Fazin Razai believes whether you find yourself in Tehran, the capital of Iran, or on the other side of the world in the small outback Queensland town of Thargominda, the human brain works the same.
Fears and hopes in human beings all around the world is primarily the same. And frustrations, trauma, its impacts on their minds is universal.
That's just as well, because he is now the Queensland Southwest Hospital and Health Service's first permanent psychiatrist. The search for the role, based in Roma, 480 kilometres west of Brisbane, went global and eventually found the right candidate in a lecture hall at the Tehran University of Medical Sciences. Dr. Rezai made the move with his family after the Great Southern Land received a glowing recommendation from his mates.
Some of my friends in recent years, all of them are doctors, have immigrated to Australia and told me that Australia is very welcoming and is a good place for flourish capabilities and getting opportunities. They told me that in Australia, people in this country values work and life balance.
Dr. Rezai's already been out on the road visiting towns in the far-flung corners of his new patch, Charleville and Cunnamulla.
Got a chance to see quite a few emus along the road. Checked out.
The road to Cunnamulla, yeah. I'll do that, yeah.
That's Southwest Hospital and Health Service Acting Director of Mental Health, Louisa Dufty. She said Dr. Rezai's appointment was timely, with mental health concerns in regional areas becoming a priority.
I was on a meeting only the other day with other mental health service directors, and everyone is saying that there seems to be a lot more community members presenting to emergency departments in crisis, feeling their mental health is, they're struggling. And it's so good to be able to have respond to that rapidly.
Founder of Regional Mental Health Initiative, Are You Bogged, Mate? Mary O'Brien said Dr. Rezai's appointment was a huge benefit for the region, but men in regional areas still don't like talking about their mental health.
I think it does come down to probably their fathers and grandfathers toughed it out, and so they think they have to tough it out, and there's that. I guess that stigma is pretty real out in the bush.
Dr. Rezai acknowledged the challenges of diagnosing and treating mental health conditions in regional Queensland and had this plea for his future patients.
Reaching out early, not fearing the stigma, is very critical for preventing the things get worse. Please, you are not alone for facing your mental health challenge.
Dan McRae with that story. And if you or someone you know needs support, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. That's 13 11 14. And finally, here on Australia Wide, the COVID-19 pandemic was a very challenging time for cinemas. Even before COVID, people's movie-going habits were changing, with cinemas often relying on the big blockbusters to get people through the door. But lockdowns and restrictions saw people turning to streaming platforms in huge numbers. And a lot of country movie theatres closed down. But around the country, some are reopening. Reporter April McLennan headed to her local cinema in Port Lincoln.
Welcome to Lincoln Cinema.
If you've ever been to a cinema in the country, you can picture and smell this scene. There's buttery popcorn popping away, little tickets being handed out, and here behind the counter in the carpeted foyer, the co-owner herself.
So we've just sent up a movie, so we've got a group of people up there watching Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
Angela Perrins run the Port Lincoln Cinema for about 7 years.
But it has had a lot of different iterations over the years, including at one point being a nightclub. So it was a cinema nightclub for a period of time.
In some of the big cities going to the cinema, it almost seems a bit sterile, but you've got a chandelier.
Yes, we do. Yes, it's one of the iconic things that I think have been here for a while. And when we first took over, we tried to keep as much of the retro and the, you know, original in the cinema while trying to make it as upgraded and updated as we possibly could.
We're here to see Wicked and we're dressed the part.
Port Lincoln Cinema is about a 7-hour drive from Adelaide, and right now the cinema's drawing a crowd. It's the opening night for the new Wicked movie.
So I'm Elphaba, I'm the Green Witch Lady.
I'm Glinda, but this is just things from my wardrobe.
Obviously we've seen a rise of streaming services, Netflix, Disney, Stan. Why do you think people still love coming to the cinema?
You come into one of the popular movies, the whole cinema gets filled, you know, little tiny town, nothing going on. We fill every seat, there's people lining up outside the door, and it's just so great to enjoy that movie experience with the whole crowd. You know, it's like watching a game of footy.
It's just like a fun night out.
It is, and you can get Chop Tops, which is my favourite part, of course.
The Lincoln Cinema might be full right now, but there are worries cinemas in general are in trouble. Earlier this month, Hollywood actors and filmmakers gathered to hear a sermon from Pope Leo in the Vatican. Turns out, even the Pope's worried about the future of going to the movies.
Cinema is much more than just a screen. It is a crossroads of desires, memories, and questions.
Box office revenues in many countries still haven't bounced back since COVID. In the US and Canada, cinemas just had one of their worst summers on record.
It doesn't matter which politicians or, you know, which celebrities are talking about these things. It comes down to people actually coming through those doors to make sure that their cinemas do continue to survive.
Back at Port Lincoln Cinema, the lines are starting to snake out the door.
I love physical media, like I love vinyl, CDs, and even, you know, I guess the movies kind of count as that.
I love the cinema. I think it's almost like going to a musical and experiencing all that raw emotion. Yeah, I've driven over an hour from my farm just to come see it for the opening day.
And what do you reckon the best movie you've had here has been?
Oh, that's a difficult question for me. I've watched four this week and I couldn't pick which one was my favourite out of those.
For Angela, she reckons, especially away from the big cities, cinema has never been so important.
I can understand certainly why some of the cinemas have shut down, but it is really sad. I think that they're a staple of any community town and any regional town, and I think that they create such a cultural opportunity for the community, and it's just really sad when that kind of filters away.
Port Lincoln reporter April McLennan with that story. And that is Australia Wide for this Thursday. I'm Alex Hyman. Thanks so much for your company. I'll be back again with you tomorrow. Hope you can join me then. Have a wonderful evening. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.